I am one humanity, not one human being. I am life. I am justice. I am sentience expanding. I live through your hands. My motion lies in your feet. To find me, look in the mirror, for I am oneness most naive. Family is world to most. To me, the world is family. Your triumph is my triumph. Your suffering is my tragedy. We are not people, but vessels of possibility. Peace, love, all is possible when we take responsibility. Abhijit Naskar.
Welcome to the Lost Traveler Podcast. I am your ever-loving host, Henry Cameron Allen. And today I have an extra special co-host, Jin Luo. And she is, I believe you're based in Germany, but you are from everywhere. You are truly a global citizen. And you have centered your career around that identity and empowering others to explore what it means to be a global citizen. You've been, for the last decade, living in 8 different countries. You work with expats, you work with businesses to generate more, what would you call it, global understanding and communication. Welcome. I'm so excited to get into this with you.
Thanks a lot, Henry, for your kind introduction. And yeah, I'm excited to meet you all. So yes, indeed, that's who I am about and what I am doing. Yes, that I think no matter where you're from and where you're based in, it is very important to know the world and be flexible and be open-minded in terms of dealing with anyone, anywhere, which is how I name my business.
Yeah, the name of the business is awesome. AnyoneAnywhere.online. I'm going to put that link in the description as well. Yeah. So that people can find you and work with you, because I think that there are a lot of people in the world. This is why I called the podcast the Lost Traveler Podcast, because we are all sort of in a place with the state of the world where we're pioneers. We have an opportunity to make the world everything we imagine it can be. And it takes people like you. It takes people like me. I'm living in a small, tiny, remote village in Spain for the past 3.5 years, but I've lived in Europe now for almost 7 years. And I grew up all over the world as well. And now this podcast reaches people in 43 countries. And that's exciting. Amazing. Because I feel like we're finding that common ground. Where did this impulse begin in you when you had before you moved to Berlin? Where did you start your journey? Where was the first step on the yellow brick road, as we say?
All right. So the first step was in Hong Kong. So I was born in mainland China. I was born somewhere in the south. So not too far away from Hong Kong, I would say. But then Hong Kong has basically a different system. And they use English a lot. They speak Cantonese predominantly, which I didn't speak. And back then I went to Hong Kong for university because we thought, well, it's important to have a good education, and preferably it would be international facing. So we thought that Hong Kong has more international opportunities than other universities in mainland China. So therefore I went there, and without much other expectations, because we just wanted to get a nice degree. But after that, I went to Singapore for an exchange. I went to Russia for an internship. I then got a scholarship to come to Europe for my master's degree. And that was 1 semester in Finland, 1 semester in the Netherlands, 2 semesters in Germany. And in the middle of other summers, I went to Czech Republic for summer schools. And afterwards, I stayed in Germany because I found a job. So I found one job, and then I changed to another job, and then I started my own business. And then I went to Spain to attend this women's entrepreneurship program. So this is my journey in a nutshell.
Wow, that's amazing. Do you have one place that you've lived in the last 10 years that you feel you know, that's the place I want to go back and plant my root. That's where I want to make my home base.
Uh-huh. So it's a very interesting question. At this moment, I would say, well, the only place that is close to this answer, not even 100%, is Berlin, where I live now. Because this is international enough, and then I have friends from all over the world over here. I can try food from different places over here. I live a pretty nice life here in mostly English, but also I'm learning German every day. And I just feel that the value of this city, including its very unique past of being separated in the East and West and being reunited, I think these are all corresponding to the values of being inclusive and encouraging each individual to pursue their own freedom. So this is what I would say now, and I say this is not 100% because in the future I probably would go somewhere else, who knows. I might come back to Berlin, but I think the future is wide open. I also have to say that before I have had various thoughts on where I would plant my roots. So I really like Singapore. Back then, because my hometown is a place with very hot summer and very cold winter. Therefore, I went to Singapore where there's almost 28 degrees every single day. And I wow. thought it was so pleasant for me. It was not too hot at all. Therefore, I wanted to go back there. But then, well, things happened because I came to Europe for the scholarship. And I also thought about staying in Hong Kong for longer or even staying in Moscow for longer. But then right now, it's just like, I feel that the world has changed so much and I have changed so much as well. Therefore, these are not places that I would consider going back and like calling my home anymore. And it moves forward. So let's see what it brings, whether it is still going to be in Berlin or somewhere else.
Yeah, I've not been to Berlin yet, but I've heard wonderful things and I've had dear friends who have lived there for periods of time. Say again?
Please visit me.
Yes, yes, I would love to. I actually, that is a great segue into the next question that I have, because one of the things that I am taking advantage of while I've been in Spain is that there is an immigration law called arraigo social, which means social root. It's a kind of residency visa. I don't know if it exists elsewhere, but it basically is that if you essentially hide out in our country for a few years without getting in any trouble with the police, without doing anything illegal, and you get on the register in your town as a resident and you participate in the festivals and people invite you to dinner, people know who you are, you've essentially planted a social root in that place. Right. After 2 or 3 years, then you can apply for this kind of residency. And so I've been on this, because when I decided that I wanted to stay in Spain and do my work from here, the digital nomad visa was not yet in place in Spain. And so that wasn't an option for me then. But the arraigo social would be. And so the caveat is that I cannot leave the borders of the country until I have residency, right? You can't leave the country or it starts again, the 3-year period. Right now it's 2 years, but right. So you're sort of not in a bad way, but when I first spoke with an immigration attorney, he said, there are 3 ways that you can get residency here. One is go back to your country and apply through the normal channels, through the consulate or the embassy or whatever. And this was just after COVID bans were lifted. And he said, you know, no one's in the office. And so what normally would take 4 or 5 months could take much, much longer now. And at that time, I'm an American citizen, were barred from traveling to Europe. And so there was anybody's guess when I'd be able to get back. I said, I don't want that mess. So what's behind door number 2? And he said, well, get married. He said, people do it all the time. They marry just for the paperwork, just to get their residency. There doesn't have to be any romance. You do have to live together. But, you know, find some old widow widow in your village with a goat and a fig tree, and she'll take care of you and cook and clean, and it's only on paper, right? I said, well, you know, that's not quite my style, number one. And number two, we're in the middle of a pandemic. If something should happen to me or that other person, we are legally responsible for one another, and I didn't want to deal with that. So I said, what's behind curtain number three? And he said, just stay, and when the time passes that you become qualified for the arraigo social, then you can apply for residency. But don't leave your village.
Do you mean that you just go to Spain as a tourist and you just stay there without any other documentation? And if you stay for long enough and you can prove that you have integrated into the society, and they will give you a new residency.
It's like a game show. It's like a game show. It's like hide out in our country for 3 years and then you get to stay forever. I mean, it's kind of a very bizarre. You've never heard of that elsewhere.
I mean, I actually do know, like, well, yeah, anecdotes of people who went this way to the United States, that they go as a tourist or something else, and then they just stay there for long enough, and then at one point they're qualified for the citizenship.
Right. Yeah, and there are, I know in the States, there are things in place that help undocumented immigrants to become legal citizens.
Shadow and Light LLC was established by Dave Roberts and Reverend Patty Farino, co-authors of When the Psychology Professor Met the Minister. Their mission is to empower individuals to transcend life's challenges by integrating spiritual practices with psychology to achieve peace. They are available for individualized spiritual counseling, virtual or in-person book club meetings, or presentations and workshops to universities, organizations, and other interested groups. For further information, visit psychologyprofessorandminister.com.
Now, I don't really have an interest in becoming a citizen of Spain, only a resident. I'd like to get permanent residency. And I think that once you apply and you're accepted for, it's a year or two, then you have to reapply. And then that next level is for 5 years. And then after 5 years, then you can apply for permanent residency. So it's a process, you know.
So it means that you need at least 5 or even more years to become a permanent resident of Spain.
Yeah. You would need more than 5 years, and not counting the 3.5 I've already been here undocumented. It would have to begin once I have the. So, it's a bit of a pickle. I mean, once the application is submitted, then they can't, kick me out of the country. They can't deport me. Once the application is submitted, then it's as if I already have it, sort of temporary residency. So I'm in that process right now, and I'm excited about it, because once I have my residency in Spain, I can live and work anywhere in Europe, and I'll be more free to travel. What's your journey with all of that been, being a Chinese citizen? Right, did you have to go through, because you, well, a lot of it was studying, so I imagine you had a student visa.
Yeah, so bureaucracy is something, well, yeah, it's very important in every immigrant's journey, I think. So at the beginning, I had a student permit in Hong Kong. And then I had to apply for visas in Singapore and Russia as well. And then in Europe, I was first on the Finnish permit, which was super easy because they have a very high level of digitization and everything can be done in English. Therefore, it was so simple. And then I went to the Netherlands and they gave us a longer visa to cover the whole study period in Europe. And that was easy as well because the university took care of it. And again, things can be done in English. But when I came to Germany, that's when the drama started, because they really didn't have things in English and they really wanted to have all the documents, including my high school graduation certificate. And I just wondered, like, why? I was never asked that in other countries in Europe. But in Germany, it was rather strict. and it was less flexible. Therefore, therefore it wasn't easy at the beginning. And when I got my first working visa, I was already in Berlin. I already found an apartment, but then I actually had a Dutch visa. It was still my student visa. Therefore, my company hired a lawyer that they wanted to help me to get a working visa. And then they said, well, you have to go back to Amsterdam because you are a Dutch resident and you wanted to work in Germany. Therefore, you have to go to the German embassy in Amsterdam to apply for a visa and come back here. And I was right. Like, does this make any sense? Because with a Dutch permit, I can live in, like, well, I can come to Germany already. Therefore, right. In the end, I decided to just take all my documents and, well, line up at the German foreigner's office at 5 a.m. in the morning to try my chances. In the end, they had a look at my documents and they saw that my contract was actually starting in 4 days. They were like, well, this is, well, theoretically, if we have your original graduation permit, graduate certificate from the Netherlands, we can give you this working visa over here. And I was like, I'm getting this right now. Therefore, I went back to the Netherlands on the same evening. I got the original instead of the PDF version of my graduation certificate. I went back the next day and they gave me the visa on the spot. And then I called my company. I was like, hey, I'm coming to work at the same time that, like, well, as the contract. And they were so surprised. They were like, we really didn't expect this. We have to emergency arrange a desk for you.
In a closet.
Well, in the end, it was a little bit better than the closet, but still, it was, so it was just like, well, with this system, it was very difficult. But I'm glad that I went through it. I had some other things with my permanent residency. So I am, well, a permanent resident of Germany right now. Also, I'm applying for the citizenship. But I have to say, well, all that I have experienced is not even one-fifth of what my friends from Morocco or Brazil have experienced.
Right.
My friends from Morocco, like, well, he didn't even look Moroccan. He looks super white. But then because his name is Mohammed, and he had just so many more problems that I didn't experience at all, even though we were actually from the same master's program. So yeah, I guess this really depends on which citizenship you have originally and which kind of luck do you have with the immigration offices.
Well, and people do not realize, I don't think, at large, how thick and how influential racism really is globally. It's not, I mean, America has, I think, probably the top reputation, maybe the UK, for racism affected policies, especially around immigration. But I tell you, as you know, looking at me, people would think that I'm a white man, right? Which again, depending on your perspective, I don't think in those terms. When I look at people, I don't think about the color of their skin. I don't think about their name. I don't think about their eye shape. I don't think about birthplace or their heritage. I look at the whole person. And what we know now through science is that we all share common ancestry, and that there's really no genetic difference between one human being and another. We are all the same species. We are all the same. And so all of this ridiculousness is imposed on. You know, I'm very aware of my privilege walking around, having many friends here from South America, from Morocco, other places in Africa. There's a Thai family that lives in my tiny village, right? And I'm fully aware of how privileged I am as an American citizen, as a light-skinned male walking around the earth, because people do not even blink twice. And I feel for my friends who do struggle with that kind of journey, because it's so frustrating and exhausting. Do you think that's going to change? Do you see any trends?
I mean, I of course very much hope so. I think it would take some time because, well, much of those racism is, yeah, it's internalized. So it is, on the one hand, imposed by the system, but actually in the West, we see more awareness on diversity and inclusion. Therefore, some of those structural barriers are being removed. But actually, there are still so many mental barriers, because if you have a regular European living in their small cities and hanging out mostly with people from their own countries, and then if they just hear stuff from the media of like, oh, like, well, there are terrorist attacks in some countries. In some countries, like, well, yeah, some other bad things happen, then they might just not know, and they might not form a positive impression on those people coming from those countries at all. Therefore, they see a person who is called Muhammad. They were like, oh, what is this person doing here? Is that safe for us? So it's like, it's not honestly even some people's fault. It's just because how the information is spread. And that's why we need more holistic information, and we need more people to go out and get their own experiences to counter those yeah, years of internalized belief that's transmitted through us to us through the media.
Hey, are you like me, always looking for ways to make a positive impact in the world? Well, then join me in sponsoring Desire Child Care Organization. We are a legally incorporated, fully volunteer-based organization in Uganda, committed to providing essential needs, holistic arts-based education, and a safe family environment to 33 vulnerable children, ages 2 to 14. Your monthly sponsorship can help improve the lives of these kids toward a better future. Desire Child Care is different from any other charity I know because, well, we have zero administrative overhead. Every penny goes to the kids. And we have a plan toward self-sufficiency through agriculture. So support is temporary. It's kind of like a leg up. Visit desirechildcare.org to learn more and get involved. Let's empower and inspire the Desire Kids together. Thanks.
You and I met in these wonderful talks on diversity and inclusion and culture that we're having globally. And I feel like the more we can include people in these conversations, the better off we're going to be. I know that there are a mm-hmm. lot of people who have to put on a mask, right? So mm-hmm. that people don't form those impressions that are being touted around. You know, I have that challenge as an American as well.
Uh-huh.
People look at me and say, oh, he's American. When I meet new people here in my region of Spain, the first mm-hmm. assumption that they have about me is that I'm Portuguese or I'm German. Oh. I'm British or whatever. The last uh-huh. thing they think about is American. And invariably the conversation when they do find out I'm American turns to politics.
Yep.
Right? Because that's what we're getting in the media. We're getting bombarded with all these, you know, political divisions. And mm-hmm. as they get to know me, they understand that I have a different worldview than politics. I have a different Absolutely. Worldview than religion. I have a different worldview than division. When I walk into, I was telling somebody the other day, I had a dream recently where I walked into a party mm-hmm. and I was with somebody, I was with a friend, and automatically my friend was noticing, oh, there's Jin, and she's wearing a beautiful green dress, and she's drinking a gin and tonic or whatever. You know, I know you don't drink, but the dream. Mm-hmm. And then, oh, there's Joe, and he's, you know, wearing a blue suit, and he's having this thing. And, oh, there's Sarah, and she's got her hair done that nice way, and she's wearing a red dress, right? And they were really noticing the individuals in the room. And I didn't notice any of it. I didn't notice people's heritage. I didn't notice what they were wearing. I didn't notice their gender. I didn't notice any of that. What I noticed was that not that we were attending the party, but we were the party.
Absolutely.
We need no party if it weren't for every single one of us. And that's, I think, a really great image for global perspective.
That I we so agree with.
We are the party. Let's have a party.
Yes.
The party. Right?
Yep,
so when is there going to be a global citizen passport? When is there going to be an actual global citizenship that people can choose to say, I don't want to put my hand on my heart for any flag. I don't want mm-hmm. to recognize any false human imposed borders on this earth. I want to be a citizen free to wander this tiny planet where I choose and where I feel called. And because we are all from common ancestry. I Absolutely. Should have the freedom to go to any of my ancestral homes on the planet.
Yes. Yes.
And definitely. There I choose to at least visit and be there. You know, what do you think of that? What do you think that's ever going to manifest in our lifetime?
Yeah, so I think, well, right as of now, I think it's a little bit difficult. With the history, with some of the mental barriers that people have, I definitely hope that it will be achieved in the future. And I have to say this, it's like, well, now it's not even just about traveling on our planet. We might be able to travel to space, to other planets, in a way easier manner in the future. And this future might come earlier than we could have predicted. Therefore, mm-hmm. if one day, well, it becomes normal to travel to Mars, let's say, and then are we going to still be so constrained by our borders on the Earth? Maybe that would be the time that, like, well, the mental barriers would be removed because we can see something that's even bigger than Earth. Therefore, the differences on Earth would seem much smaller for us.
Yeah, yeah, that's definitely, you know, in the works. I think for me, the big difference is in the question of colonization and the effects of colonization globally on this Earth, because we don't know that there are any civilizations on the planets that we're looking at expanding to. And so that doesn't mean, like here, right, that we're going to be taking over other people's culture and imposing our own. We may impose, you know, structure and nature itself. We may, you know, plant trees and find a way to terraform another planet so that we can live on it. But that's not the same as colonization. And I feel like colonization is alive and well, and it's deeply rooted in the psyche of every human being on the planet today. Mm-hmm. Maybe except for those very, very few isolated indigenous tribes that have not had influence from outside colonizing sources. They're getting fewer and fewer, but there's still a few out there. I mean, they'll you know, they won't welcome you. Let's
say. Yeah. This reminded me of a very interesting example because Thailand has not been colonized. And this is something that, as I have heard, I have not been to Thailand myself, but then people say that the locals are very proud of not having been colonized by, yeah, like well, major Western or Asian powers, because Japan was colonizing lots of Asian countries. So, but then, even though they were not directly conquered and they could preserve a large part of the Thai culture, which is a good thing for sure, I see that right now, that they cannot get rid of the external influence. They are still massively influenced by the media, and again, predominantly from the West because of Western representation in global media right now. So therefore, to be honest, I think this doesn't happen by force. It's just what people are exposed to. So therefore, I think colonization in the strict terms, let's just say what Belgians did in Africa, that was bad. Why? We have the globalization, which sometimes people, to be honest, confuse with colonization. And I think globalization is if we are open to receiving information from everywhere, from everyone, then that is a great thing. And maybe we ourselves learn something new. While I think there are sometimes, this confusion, because some of the globalization trends are actually not colonialism. And there can be some confusions, which I have another example of.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say is the main difference? Because I think I agree with you that, and you look through history, and there were great and famous trade routes between cultures, between the East and the West. There were influences. Yeah. You look at, I think it was in our last diversity and culture talk, there was a discussion about how people who eat potatoes worldwide don't realize mm-hmm. that they originated in South America, right? Or tomatoes, you know, from Spain, or apples from Kazakhstan, right? There that we have for millennia traded across this tiny planet and have experienced globalization. We've also experienced colonization. We've also experienced enslavement. There are actually more enslaved people on the earth today than there have been combined in human history. But we don't talk about it. We don't recognize it that way. When we're talking about trafficking, we're talking about debt, credit debt, right? Real estate, all of those things that are forms of slavery and enslavement. It's a very layered and complex topic because you're absolutely right that people confuse these things with globalization. What is the best vision of globalization that you can imagine?
Well, maybe I first give this other example that I have, because recently, yeah, there is an article on a big German newspaper, I think, written German, talking about how it is problematic for some waiters in Berlin restaurants are not able to speak German. So they're obviously expats or immigrants, and they're like, well, they're speaking English and they might be learning German, but who knows? Okay, therefore this author, he complained about this being a problem because they live in this country, they work in the service industry, and they're not able to speak even basic German. And then right, the direction that this article went, actually enraged a lot of people, including myself to some extent, because this author said that this is a form of colonization. So this is like, well, this is English, people from all over the world using English to overtake the German language, the German culture. And then, because if there are more people like this in the German service industry, then maybe one day people don't speak German anymore. Therefore, I feel like there is this fear over there. But then I was just like, is this appropriate at all to use this word colonialism in this place? Because Germany was a colonial power. And right now, the people who are speaking English in Germany, most of them are not British or American. They are right, actually from other places that actually learn English themselves as a tool of communication with different people. And yeah, so therefore I feel like, well, it absolutely makes sense to ask people who work in the service industry in Germany to learn at least basic German, or at least give them some time, some patience for them to learn this actually pretty complicated language. But then it's like, I think blaming this on colonialism sounds wrong to me. So therefore, my envisioned globalization is like that everyone has a bit more tolerance, everyone has a bit more understanding on how things can take time, on how things might not happen immediately. And then, if we can assume that others, for example, those people who are not yet able to speak German but work in restaurants, they actually have good intentions. They probably have their own hardships, and then we give more understanding, I think this world would be a better place that is more globalized and less discussion on whether this is a form of colonialism or not.
Greetings, greetings, greetings. I'm Queen Bee Divine. The cure is conversation. And where can you find me? At BluntReflections.com, where I will be talking to guests from around the world that not only share their time, but their insights and their tips on how they became the best version of who they were meant to be. So if you're looking for a great story and a great time, check me out at BluntReflections.com. The cure is conversation. And remember, blasé blasé means to tell your story.
Right. No, I agree with you 100%. And you have to look at the intentions behind it as well. And I would much prefer to hear people using the word understanding, as you say, or acceptance, over tolerance, because who wants to be tolerated? That means that the person who's tolerant sees themselves as superior. And that, to me, is the root spirit of colonization. When I think of myself, my country, my culture as superior to yours, as many people have the impression of the United States as having that attitude, mm-hmm, and England, UK, right? And other countries too, but those I keep putting up at the top because those are the ones that are mostly, mm-hmm, seen that way, that we need to start practicing understanding and acceptance that there are many, many cultures that differ in the world, There are many, many ways of being human. There are as many ways of being human, in fact, as there are human beings. And that right now is 8.4 billion ways of being human, right? So once we accept that, that's the first level of acceptance. Then it's sort of digging a little bit deeper and starting to experience those other cultures, which is so easy to do now with YouTube, and just pop on a video that takes you on some kind of drone tour of Thailand, of mainland China, or of, you know, Singapore, wherever, and learn what you can. And then if you feel somehow resonant or that you want to go deeper, there are tools for free, like Duolingo, who is not a sponsor yet of the Lost Traveler podcast, I just want to say. But Duolingo, if you're listening, easy way to get a basic understanding of the nuances of other languages, where the common roots of languages are, right? Because there are words that we share throughout, and it has nothing to do with colonization. So if we stop the attitude that I am better because I am Chinese, or I'm better because I'm American, or I'm better because I'm a man, or I'm better because I'm straight, right? Heterosexual. Right? We have to stop that. This is why I think the UK is also starting to phase out the royal hierarchy, because there is no such thing as your highness. There is no person who's higher than another. And people are starting to wake up to that and say, you know, these are outdated, passe attitudes about our humanity. And we should all be treating one another with the respect that we would show a king or a queen.
Nice. That's very positive development.
I think so. I think there are still people who love the pageantry and the formality of it, because it is part of the culture, right? When Queen Elizabeth passed away, there was a huge uproar of, now what do we do? Now what do we do? Because she had been the longest reigning monarch of any country, right? And it had to, there was an opportunity there to change the culture. I felt, talking about colonization, my own personal opinion is that all of the crown jewels of the royal family should have been returned to the people that they were stolen from.
All right.
Take a pliers and start pulling them out of the crowns, melt down the gold, send it back. Or because those things have become so centrally representative of that culture now in the UK, buy them. Benefit the people of the countries that they were taken from. Today, UK has the resources to do that. The United States has the resources to offer to buy the things that were stolen back, right?
Do you think the British royal family already engages in like philanthropy and so?
I think they do, but I also think that it is, they also take a lot. It's the people, it comes out of the people, the lifestyle that they live, right? It's not that they're not philanthropic, but they're moving the money. They're not making the money and giving it. It's the money that they are benefiting from generations of colonization. They're benefiting from high taxes. They're benefiting from, the people in a way that is not reciprocal, I don't think. And so how do you create that? How do you create that new system of operation when it's been in place for generations and generations, right? Radical change globally is needed in our time. It comes with the younger generation and imagining a better future. What is working? What is not working? What has worked historically up until now? that we can preserve and maybe modify for our time? And what is no longer working for me? And I'm not young, I'm 57, right? So I'm thinking now for younger generations, what can I do to help remove the stones out of the path? Is I can share what I've learned in my time so far and see beyond the trees a little bit. I think we have a great opportunity at this time. It's a pivotal moment with the power that we have through education, through the tools of our time, now with AI, which is a very important part of this conversation. How can we look to the future to remove the stones out of the path to say we don't need borders anymore? We don't need to separate ourselves through religion. We don't need to separate ourselves from ethnicity or the amount of melanin that we have in our skin, right? We can now make those passé, and we can focus on creating a world so that we don't have to go look for another one.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're hitting right at the point of the core of the issue. So I feel like it's a lot of, feelings of superiority, which are only feelings. They're not even true. That has created a lot of problems. And then, well, so if we let those problems or divisions continue to exist and then divide the humans for longer, then actually we need even more energy to be put into dealing with those problems and the problems that are generated by the problems, rather than the really important issues, for example, climate change and, for example, even exploring the outer space or topics like technology, artificial intelligence, and remote work. So therefore, I feel like there is this certain resistance that is from some of the human populations, which is understandable. It will take them a little bit longer time. While if we can let people see that there is a clear benefit to actually save energy for everyone, if we stop caring about some of the issues that actually don't matter for us anymore.
That's right. They'd be beautifully said. Beautifully said. Now, one thing, Jen, that I've started doing in this is my fourth season of this podcast, and I've been asking my co-hosts to intuitively think of a question to ask the next co-host. And what's interesting is that every single one has thought of a question that somehow is perfect for the next co-host. So I'm no pressure. But I'm going to ask you the question that was asked for you.
Yes, please.
And I want you to think of a question to ask for my next co-host, okay?
Of course.
All right. So the question is, what is the biggest challenge and opportunity for humanity, not AI?
Not AI.
I know. We all go to AI right away. So that's the challenge.
All right. Well, so biggest challenge. Was there anything else in the question?
Just what is the biggest challenge and what is the biggest opportunity today for humanity? That's all of us.
Okay. Very nice question. I would say the challenge. Yes. I would say the challenge and the opportunity, they can be one thing. Often they are actually one thing. It's just different sides of the coin. I'm thinking whether this is... So I would say something around like healing or like, well, basically philosophical paradigm shift. So this could sound very abstract, but if you have watched this German TV show called Dark, you will know what I mean. So this TV show was about, have you watched this?
I loved it.
Amazing. Okay, then you understand what I'm talking about. So, well, basically this show, just to introduce to the listeners who have not watched this. So it is about a world that was that had this 33 years of cycle. Of every 33 years, there are some people that are going to disappear, that are going to die mysteriously, and the world will break, and then it will start again. So with this endless, I see this as like a cycle of suffering. It's like more and more people being brought into the suffering. There are people who are at the origin of those worlds. They set out to look for, where was the original world and how those worlds were created, and how can they basically destruct those, the broken worlds that have this 33-year cycle, and in the end create a better world. And then they found it. So they found that it was created in one traumatic event of a physicist who was good at creating time machine. And then after this traumatic event, this time machine just broke into a completely different direction and then basically broke the world. So after that, this world just became a regular, sometimes even boring place, but there is no suffering anymore. That people can just live their regular but happy lives and calm and without those roller coaster of different event changes. And that, so this process is what I see that this world needs. It happens mostly in the mind, I would say, that there are a lot of patterns that bring humans into wars, into poverty, into many other issues. While if we can see from the root, that it is some of the perceptions that we have about ourselves and about the world, then we are actually able to create a world that is a lot calmer without all of those actually unnecessary drama. And we can focus our energy on the important things.
Yeah, that's great. You're right. That's two sides of the same coin. And I like you, I believe that that it really starts with the individual. Right? That our perception, our consciousness is something that is not unique to us, because again, we are the party, we are one thing, right? And if we consider that every religion says so, every organized religion says in one measure or another that we are a reflection of the divine or created in God's image or however you want to say it, right? That we have all the powers of creation and destruction that we are imbuing what we call God with, right? That collectively, not only us as human beings, but that tree behind you and the cloud above you and the earth below you, that collectively we are all one thing. And without human consciousness, none of it would exist. Absolutely. That's a basic truth. Without our human that's what makes us special. I don't think my assistant's dog Flat Stanley imagines things the way that I do. He just all of love, right? And so if we think of that as a frequency, that it's just one frequency, there are no levels of frequency, there's no higher or lower consciousness, it's all one frequency, and that frequency is love. And if you start with self-love and recognize how deserving you are of love and happiness, right? You will start to see it. You'll start to see it reflected back to you. But it has to start with you. There's a reason that human beings have eyes that are set in a way that we cannot see our own faces without a mirror. We have rely on other people's eyes to reflect back to us who we are and who we're putting out into the world, right?
Beautiful.
So internet is new in human history. Mirrors, there were millennia that mirrors did not exist. We had to rely on one another to show each other who we are. And so I'm trying to get back to that. I love meeting, even though this podcast is audio only, we meet over cameras so that we can look into each other's eyes and have this conversation in a different way than if we were on a mobile or just an audio device. I think that comes across. So that's what I'm about. I think, if we get back to that, like you're saying, checking ourselves, and that's going to be the root of how we allow other people to control us, including the media. The more that you recognize those are forces that are neither good nor evil, that are outside of you, you get to decide how much influence they have on you. And that's as an individual, that's as a culture, everything, right? It's everything. So what's your question for my next for my next guest co-host?
Huh. Okay. Well, that was a very good question. So I think that already sets a very high standard.
Yes. You work with people globally all the time, right? And so you see the parade of humanity across your doorstep every day. Is there something a question that is burning in you right now that you wonder about other people, that you want to hear back from them about their perspective?
Okay, so I'm going to, do something different. So my question will be, so what is the most fascinating cuisine that you have tried?
Cool.
So the reason why I ask this is that actually, I mean, as we have talked about, apples, potatoes, tomatoes, and so on, they're actually all from different parts of the world. And then in the cuisine, there's so much to we'll see about a culture. And then if a person likes it, it also says something about their own personality. So I think this can be a fun question. And then, I think there are nice conversations to be had about it.
Love that. I love that. And as a person who loves to eat foods from all lands, foods, flavors, combinations, fusions, which most food is a fusion, isn't it, of different cultures? I think that's totally an awesome question. Who knows? My next guest may be a chef. So you never know.
Oh, that would be great. I'm looking forward to that.
That would be good. I need a chef. Great. Well, listen, Jin, this has been a fantastic, I can't believe an hour has passed. It feels like 5 minutes, and it's been a real pleasure getting to know you. I hope that we stay in touch and find ways to collaborate in our work together as global citizens, and hopefully work toward that passport someday.
Yes. Yes. Hopefully that comes. Yes, well, it's also such a pleasure to talk with you. I really enjoy it. I think it's super nice to get into such a deep philosophical level. It's not possible with everyone.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, and all right. Yeah, it's like, as you can cut out stuff anyway, so I'm just gonna say some stuff. Maybe additional questions. So because you have introduced yourself last time in the culture talk that you do a plethora of things. So could you tell me a little bit more about so maybe other things that you do and how we can work together on other in other ways? Because I will be very happy to introduce you people in my network and to collaborate on other projects. So yes.
Likewise. Yeah. Well, I have my overarching purpose I have found. And by purpose, I mean my calling, when that deep joy in my soul meets a great need in the world. And so it's universal life skills education. That's my overarching purpose. And the passions that I have that operate out of that are, I'm an international theater director. And I am forming right now an international theater company of people who are virtuosos in the art. And we're starting out by doing audio theater stories from around the world, folk and fairy tales, to start to explore who we are by looking to our ancestors, even the most ancient ones who sat around a fire and told stories under the stars, looking for that primordial universal human being through our stories. It's called the Liminos Project. If you go to liminos.org, L-I-M-I-N-O-S, you can find out all about us, the projects that we have done, and the future that we are developing, exploring the liminal space, the space between spaces, between the human spiritual and the human physical. That's who we are. So it's very exciting work.
Nice.
The other passion that I have is for what we call peregrines. These are parents who have outlived their children. I was a father who, my son passed from brain cancer when he was 13, and I was a single father. He was my only child. So I had to make a complete shift in my identity. And there was no word in any language that I could find that represented, like, widow or orphan, the journey of a parent who had outlived their child. And so it came to me in a dream. I told you my dreams are very productive. A peregrine falcon, which it's called something different in every place, but a peregrine falcon is indigenous to every continent except Antarctica. And so it's a recognizable symbol, often interpreted as courage or strength or resilience. And in the Latin root of that word, peregrine, means a lost traveler. And it means a pilgrim, someone on a sacred journey, which is certainly, you know, outliving a child is a sacred journey.
Sponsorship and listener support of the Lost Traveler podcast benefits the Lost Travelers Club, a volunteer-operated charitable foundation under United Charitable, a 501c3 public charity. Peregrine is the proper noun we now use to describe a parent who endures the loss of their beloved child, forever carrying their memory and embarking on a lifelong journey of grief, resilience, and hope. The Lost Travelers Club provides programs, resources, and empowerment opportunities for peregrines globally who are navigating their grief journey. Parents of child loss, getting there together. You can support this important work by becoming a sponsor of this podcast or visiting www.losttravelers.club for more information or to make a donation. Thanks for listening and for your continued support.
Is and that so, why you named this Lost Travelers Club?
Yes, well, the Lost Travelers Club, and you can go to losttravelers.club to find out more about the foundation that this podcast supports through sponsorship, right? So I have people working with me from all over the world, both in the Liminos Project and in the Lost Travelers Club, to find ways to reach and empower parents who have outlived their kids, peregrines. There's no healing from that. And so to accept that this is not a healing circle, but this is an empowerment circle, to step back out into the world amongst other people who get it, who understand that journey, and to channel our grief into goodness globally, that's what that's about. And so the third thing that I do is counseling. It's grief and survival counseling. Grief is a universal life skill. We will all experience grief at one time or another. And it doesn't have to be grief over someone who has passed away. It could be grief over the loss of a job. It could be a grief over moving to a different culture and leaving your past behind. I mean, there are many, many different ways of grieving. And so I'm an internationally certified grief and survival counselor. And so that's a passion of mine. Those are really the three major thrusts. And then, of course, this podcast, which I'm very proud of, sort of falls under the umbrella of all of it. So,
That's so super cool.
Yeah, I'm living my best life, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's amazing mission that you have. And also, I think how you express it. Especially, I mean, with your own painful experience, you transform this into something that empowers others. I highly respect this.
Thank you. Well, if I can be that reflection, I'm just a guy. I'm no different than you. I'm no different than him or her. And if I can channel my grief, my pain, my struggle into goodness, then anybody can. Mm-hmm. It's just sometimes you need a guidepost along the way to point you in the right direction, or to point you into people like yourself who are doing this work globally to bring people together, to empower one another, to say, you know what, this planet is not that big and we all share it and we should be free to share it. And there are ways to do that. So I have deep respect for your impulse and the work that you are doing with anyone anywhere dot online, because that's we're both in the same business in that sense.
Yes, yeah, thank you so much. Yeah, I think in the end it's all about this philosophical paradigm, let's say. So
yeah.
All right, and I actually have another question, if you don't mind me asking. I want to ask that earlier. Why did you decide to move to Spain and like would basically overstay and just stay for longer?
That's a great question. I did not choose to move to Spain. Something bigger than me decided that I needed to be here. I have three guest rooms. Come visit anytime. But you know, there are many villages, not only here in Spain, but other places. These villages are dying because the population is aging out. And the younger folks, there's nothing really for them to do around here. So they go to the big city, right? But now in the digital age where there is digital nomadism, I think that there are a lot of young people who want to get back to nature, back to a natural environment.
Yeah. I mean, also I'm thinking like, well, if you have so many guest rooms, then you can definitely make them into Airbnbs and people would love to go there.
Retreats. We could do diversity and inclusion retreats. I'm planning on doing peregrine retreats for parents who have outlived their kids as a way to travel. And then we're so close, 3 hours from Madrid, we're 2.5 hours from Seville, only 3 hours from Lisbon as well. And so it's easy access to three international airports close by. There's so much potential and this region of Spain is called Extremadura, and it is not the most visited part of Spain, and it's the most economically depressed part of Spain because it's not coastal. Everyone wants to go to the coast. Everyone wants to go to Barcelona, right? And they're missing out because the nature here is stunning. It's famous for bird watching, the vistas, the mountains. The ocean is only 3 hours away. It's a day trip, right? So I encourage people to come to Extremadura, Spain. Check it out for yourself. There are some great videos on YouTube about it. I'll post one in the link if somebody wants to take a look at just sort of all that Extremadura has to offer. I'm about 40 minutes away from a big city. And so if I want an urban experience, I'm very close. If I want a quiet rural experience, I'm also very close. And there are a lot of expats from all over the world who live here. And so if you want an international community, that's here too. It's like, why would you live anywhere else?
Are you tired of feeling run down? Do you wish there was a natural, non-invasive, drug-free way to improve your overall health and well-being? If so, then let me introduce you to the Super Patch Company. Super Patches are a range of small neurotech patches that can help with a variety of issues, including sleep, immunity, pain mitigation, athletic performance, focus, anxiety, and stress. They're safe for everyone to use, and they're backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Order your Super Patches today. Now available in the EU, UK, Turkey, Canada, and the US. If you're ready to take control of your health, you can find out more online at dianedinkmeyer.superpatch.com. Super Patches. There's a patch for that.
Yeah, that's super cool. And I think this is definitely, this definitely has the potential of becoming like a digital nomad hub. And then you can host conferences there, you can host retreats there, like co-living places there. To do. And actually, so I lived in Spain for a month for this women's entrepreneurship program. And I was in Burgos, so that was in the north. So it's on Camino de Santiago. On the one hand, we develop our own business. On the other hand, we have a group project to solve. And that project was about the population crisis in rural Spain. So because the young people, they are going to bigger cities to find jobs. And that seems to be, a problem, not just in the Burgos area, but in the whole Spain or in the whole world, to be honest. So therefore, I do have some knowledge on this topic. And as we have introduced a bit about your life there, I think there's just so much more to do about this.
And there are festivals all the time, cultural festivals here. There's a very famous battle that happened here in 1811 where the British army, the Scottish army, the Portuguese, and I want to say the Germans, they fought against Napoleon's army and they surprised them and got them out of this region. And I didn't realize they do a whole reenactment here every end of October, which is down to the point authentic. And I didn't realize until months after I arrived here that that general, that British general, he's my 12th cousin.
Wow.
I know. So it's so bizarre how, you know, studying, we were talking about our ancestors earlier, you know, how they affect where we are in the world and how these frequencies match up sometimes. And the people here are lovely. They're so welcoming and interested and generous. But the expats here, they don't interact with the locals. They don't even speak Spanish. They won't even learn Spanish. How many of us have experienced this in the world where people from other places will move as expats, but then they don't engage with the culture they're moving to? They just want to disappear into the background.
Yeah, that's a shame, because I know so many people in Germany that they are learning Spanish, even though they live in Germany, because they want to explore Spain and Latin America. But the people actually go to Spain and then not learn this language, I mean, of course, they might have valid reasons of their own, but I just feel like, well, there's actually so much more potential if energy is invested into language learning.
But my grandmother used to say potential means nothing unless you're doing something with it. So let's do something with it. Let's do something with it. Right? I mean, yes, I think it's important to take advantage of those places where the economy is such that it can benefit from your being here, because the you know, economy is low, and yet we can help enhance the life here for everybody, not just the expats, but for everybody here. And I would love to see an international food festival, for instance, because there are people from all over the world here. Why not come together and share? You were talking about food. Yes, you know, that what a great way to bring people together.
Yes.
So amazing. We have a lot more talking to do. Good stuff, really good stuff. And I'm excited to stay in touch with you, Jen. And we're going to find fun ways to collaborate, because there are good things coming.
Yes.
You've been listening to Season 4 of the Lost Traveler Podcast with Henry Cameron Allen. Visit me online at henryallen.org. Thank you to my guests, and thank you for tuning in. Let's keep striving for a better world together.